Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 11 says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret." Let us not divorce this from the context, but let us ask the question, even as we begin, what is this when it says unfruitful works of darkness? What in the world kind of talk is that in church? What is this idea here where it says reprove them? To reprove is to rebuke. This is not positive, this is negative. This is confrontation. This is, in a delicate, kind, gracious way perhaps, and hopefully, but however you slice it, this is saying, you're wrong. Reprove them. And then on top of that, this idea, those things done of them in secret. What is this talking about? Who said this? What's it discussing? Well, if you've been here the last few weeks, you should know. Verse 6 speaks of the children of disobedience. And prior to that, we have these descriptions of different sins and sinners. Verses 3 and 4 and 5 talks about fornication, all uncleanness, covetousness, filthiness, foolish talking, that is talk that leaves God out, jesting, that's not just being a court jester, a clown, having fun. No, that's the way we use it today, but this word in this context and the derivation of this word, the idea of jesting, is the ability to take any conversation and turn it in an immoral, devious, ungodly way. He goes on and talks in verse 5 and talks about the whoremonger, the unclean person. Again, the covetous man who he describes as an idolater. The point is this, is God now is telling us, those of us who do not want to do fornication and uncleanness and covetousness and filthiness and foolish talking and jesting, those who want to be clean, those who want to walk in the light, as we looked at last week in the prior verses, verses 8 and 9 and 10. God tells us, okay, so there are some people that do these sins, don't you do them. But he doesn't stop there. In these two verses, he tells us how we are to relate to those people who do those sins. This is not popular. He's giving us counsel about how believers and people who are seeking to live holy lives, how they should react, relate, respond to those that are indulging in, continuing in these sins. Let me read it to you again, then we'll go through it. Verse 11 says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is the same even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret." Powerful stuff, gang. Let's take it apart and see what God says. First of all, notice that fellowship is forbidden. Fellowship is forbidden. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Fellowship is this idea of joint participation in a common activity. We are not to know of this kind of sinning and just to kind of look the other way and just kind of continue on as though it's not happening. That's not virtuous. That is not holy. That is not godly. It is sinful to do that. It violates this passage of Scripture. Fellowship is forbidden. The point is that there are some people, some sinning people that are to be avoided because of their sins. This is very, very unpopular teaching and preaching. But this is what God says. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Now we, I think, legitimately could ask the question, why? So I would ask you, what comes to mind if I ask the question, why does God have no fellowship? God say have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. After all, why doesn't God tell us to be the salt of the earth and go salt them? Why does God not tell us, hey, you're the light of the world, go enlighten them? Why does God say, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness? Why does God say that? It's very important that we understand, and we'll look at three passages to confirm this. But it's very important for us to understand that sin corrupts. Sin spreads. Sin dominates. You'll see in just a moment, we'll get to the second point, and God says, instead of having fellowship, rather, reprove them. And the point is simply this. God says, have no fellowship, but rather reprove them, because fellowship is the idea of ignoring this, acting like it's not there. In other words, the absence of reproof, the absence of rebuke, is to allow them to take a stand for darkness and for us to think that we're taking a stand for light, but we are not taking a stand for light if we do not illuminate that darkness. Light that is only light within the confines of light is not light at all. Like, for example, why would you turn a flashlight on in this room? Well, because there's no electricity. Because it's dark. There'd be good cause to turn on a light in this room if there was no electricity. But right now, there would be no purpose. This is what God is saying to us when he says, and he said in the verse before this, verse 8, that we are children of light, so walk as children of light. And God says, if we are children of light, part of the way that we walk as children of light is to recognize that we cannot walk as children of light and fellowship, partner with people that are walking in this kind of darkness, or darkness wins. Look, hold your finger there for a moment. Look over in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. This will help us. Several passages. We'll look at three quickly if we have time. We will have time, I think. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Verse 9. You'll have to listen or look carefully to follow the logic here. God says, I wrote unto you in an epistle not to company with fornicators. Yet, not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or with idolaters. For then must ye needs go out of the world. You understand what he's saying? He's saying, I wrote to you and I said, hey, don't fellowship with fornicators. But wait, get it straight. I thought you'd have enough spiritual understanding and perception to understand this. I'm not saying have no fellowship with any fornicators, because if you did that, you would have to go out of this world. That is obvious hyperbole, exaggeration. But nonetheless, the point is well made. He's not talking about being careful about fellowshipping primarily with those who are lost. In this passage, he's talking about those who claim to be saved. Look at the next verse. Verse 11. But now I have written unto you not to keep company if any man that is called a brother be a fornicator or covetous, or an idolater, or a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, with such an one, watch this, with such an one, know not to eat. He's saying, listen, if somebody claims the name of Jesus Christ, and they're participating in these kinds of sins, do not even share a meal with them. Why? Because they can influence you, and because you are supposed to influence them, and even by not sharing the meal, that is in itself a reproof. I cannot eat with you because you're living like that. I love you. I'm for you. I don't want to hurt you. But God tells me that if you're going to do that, by having that, you lose me. That's a picture of what that professing brother is losing, not just your fellowship, but he's losing his fellowship with the Lord as well. Look at another passage, 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Of course, 1 Corinthians, he's writing to a church in the context of lots of rebukes. Not Saul in 2 Corinthians. He's writing in this passage and he's encouraging them that they need to be very careful with who they associate with. We looked at this quickly last week. I'll read through it again just quickly. Verse 14 says, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers." What's an unequal yoke? Well, the idea, of course, means nothing to us because we don't use yokes. And we don't even, Amish do. You know, you go and you see the yoke, perhaps, or whatever. But the idea of an unequal yoke is the idea of putting two different animals that don't match in a yoke. And the idea is that's not fair to either one of them. Put in that match. That's the idea. They would have understood that. We, perhaps, don't as readily. But nonetheless, he's talking about this idea of believers. Hey, don't get in the same project with unbelievers. They don't see eye to eye. Go through it quickly and look at the five questions and then what he says to do. He says, "For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness?" The answer to all five of these questions is absolutely none. "What concord hath Christ with Belial? What part hath he that believeth with an infidel? What agreement hath the temple of God with idols?" He's just arguing the point over and over and over and over and over again, that which should be obvious to a Christian who is perceptive and walking with the Lord and wants to please Him. He goes on and gives the rationale. He says, "For ye are the temple of the living God. And as God hath said, I'll dwell in them and walk in them and I'll be their God and they shall be my people." Here's the point. God is saying this. He's saying, you are holy. Now, if you are holy, you're saved, you're Christian, you're godly, you're seeking to walk with God, you're walking in the light. Then you cannot walk with people that are not in the light, because if you choose them, you are choosing them over choosing me. That's what he's saying. He's saying, you don't have any fellowship with them. If you do have fellowship, if you do have something in common, by doing that, you're giving up me. That's what God's saying. That's what he says there in that verse where he says, "As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God and they shall be my people." What do you do therefore? Verse 17. "Wherefore, watch these words. Come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord. And touch not the unclean thing. And I will receive you and will be a father unto you. And ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." This next verse I quoted in the sermon this morning. "Having therefore these promises." Because we have this potential for that kind of fellowship with the Lord. "Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." You know, and turn please to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And while you're turning there, let me say this. I am a big advocate of washing hands. I personally don't have a whole lot to do with hand sanitizer. We put it back there. I bought it. We put it there and all that. I'm not against it. You know, I've said this before. But I learned as a pastor, whether it's going to a hospital or even shaking hands in church, and I try to shake as many hands as I can, as some of you do. I wish you all would do that. But nonetheless, after you shake hands, you're a very wise person to recognize that every germ that's on every one of those hands is on yours. So wash your hands and get rid of it. Anyway, all that to say this. Why do you wash your hands? Why do you use hand sanitizer? And sometimes I've noticed, it's not a fault, sometimes I've noticed that we'll shake hands and it's like there's a congregation back there by the hand sanitizer. It's not a fault. I'm not complaining about that. But could it be that some of us can be more concerned about germs than we are about sin? What God is saying here is this: hey, you shake someone's hand, you might pick up their germs. That may be important, but in the broad scheme of things, that's nothing compared to picking up their sins. You can pick up their sins too. This stuff is infectious. This stuff bleeds over on us. The attitudes within a person's life that allows them to do these kinds of sins.
We don't recognize them. We don't tend to perceive them. We don't tend to understand. We don't understand how could they do all that. They did all that because it started a long time ago, the process of evil thinking. God is concerned about you. That you would be very careful because we are so vulnerable to really identifying more readily with a fellow sinner than with a holy God. We don't have a whole lot in common with an almighty, unchangeable God. We have a lot in common with broken, fallen people that think, well, the only way I can get through life is to go have an affair. You know, my wife is driving me crazy. You know, I need to go get drunk on the way home. I need to shoot up with this or that. You know, I need to go relax with this. I need to go indulge in some porn. I mean, don't we all need some kind of relief somewhere? Yes, we do. God made us that way. That's not the right place. Why? Because it is destructive.
Look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6. Now, we command you, brethren, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly and not after the tradition which he received of us. Again, verse 14. And if any man obey not our word by this epistle, note that man and have no company with him, that he may be ashamed. Yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. He's saying, recognize the potential is that he will influence you more than you'll influence him. Let me ask you a question tonight. If I ask one of these boys up here, I don't know, pick one, Andrew. He's not as big as me. But if I ask Dennis to come up here, let's say Dennis, he'll be a boy for tonight. No, but Dennis, if I asked him to come and stand right here, and I shook his hand, and I said, well, have an experiment. We're going to see who's going to win. I'll try to pull you up. You try to pull me down. Who's going to win? That's totally brainless, isn't it? Unless... That's why I said, maybe not with Andrew. God bless you, little guy. But someday you're going to be able to pull me down, and it won't be long. But nonetheless, right now, I'd probably pull him up. But for the most part, pull somebody down is easy. It doesn't even take effort. It doesn't take diligence. It doesn't take prayer. It doesn't take a lot of effort. It doesn't take a lot of intentionality. It's just be there, just influence, and boom, down they go. That's the influence we have with each other. We need to be very careful about that. God is encouraging us to be very careful. Wash your hands. How do you wash your hands spiritually? You're around people. Go put your nose in that book, man. Go get your nose in that book. Go get your nose in that book. Recognize, man, hey, I got to get a bath, man. I got to get a bath. I spent some time over here. Wow, man, get a bath. Get your nose in that book. Get your feet on the knees on the floor and talk to the Lord and go for a cleansing and say, God, hey, don't let that happen to me. God, help me. What does he say there? He says we are to admonish him. Don't treat him as an enemy. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying treat him as an enemy. Admonish him as a brother. But you be careful. You make sure that you conduct yourself in such a way that he is ashamed. Now, I ask you this question. Is that loving? You say, well, the Bible says... No. I'm not talking about if we know the facts. I mean, think of somebody you know. Well, many times there are people, well-intentioned, but they have this ludicrous insanity of a parenting idiocy of saying, I love my children too much to spank them or to correct them or to discipline them. I won't cross them. I won't rebuke them. I'm not going to admonish them. I don't want to hurt their feelings. According to that verse, there should be times in your home, if you're raising sinners, they ought to be ashamed. That's not a bad thing. You want to love your kids enough that you can say, hey, you got two possibilities here. You got your way or God's way. You go that way, man. You're better than that. I want you to be better than that. I love you. I'm not going to let you go like that. I'm going to stand between you and doing that kind of behavior. That's what God is telling us here. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. We need to ask the question of ourselves about cancer. You know, you hear about, somebody was talking with Brother Yates tonight about a mutual friend. Mrs. Altizer knows Pastor Yates and has cancer. He's been here. He was here just recently. Not recently, I guess. It's been a little while, and he's struggling with this. You know, you go to the doc, and you find out there's a struggle, and you find out there's some kind of a growth, and, you know, you get some kind of a biopsy, and you know, you're kind of nervous, but, in fact, I've got a good friend. He pastored for years here, a good friend. I helped him. He's with Jehovah Jireh. I recommended him, and he's out in the hall. In fact, pray for a guy named Bob. He's got a daughter who just, about a year ago, finished high school. She's been having headaches. And they did a brain scan on Friday. She's supposed to get results tomorrow. And the brain scan, because they're expecting there to be brain cancer. Wouldn't it be awesome if they did the brain scan and said, you don't have cancer. Even if there's some kind of a growth, some kind of a tumor. But you know, there's something there. But, I mean, the prognosis is awesome. It is surgery on your skull, that'll be serious, but it's not malignant, you know. It's just benign. It's just it shouldn't be there. It's gonna put pressure. But we have just tremendous success with actually relieving the pressure. I hope I'm not wrong medically. I think this is doable, but you get the illustration, I hope, from a lay standpoint. But you know, we relieve the pressure and remove this and there'll be recovery, But boy, if they come back and they say, I'm sorry, Pastor Vornik, but the prognosis is just, it's really not worth doing surgery. It's not feasible to do some kind of chemo or radiation because of the location. I'm sorry. But unless God intervenes, there really is no earthly hope here. There's no medical hope. I have no recommendation for you medically. What's the difference? Malignant or benign? What do we think sin is? You know, what do we think sin is? What do you think if you have a baby and you put your baby in the nursery and then you go to get your baby after the service and there's a mother right in front of you that pulls her baby out and she's got, the child has green stuff coming out their nose and they're sneezing all over yours. What do you think? You think, I wish you would have kept your baby home. Hopefully you, in honor, prefer one another and tell Beth and then she can tell. No, you know what I'm saying. But you understand, we understand infections. God is trying to teach us we need to understand spiritual infections. Sin is infectious. It's malignant. It is not passive. It is active. It is not docile. It is aggressive. It grows. It takes over. It's on the march. Always. Might be very slow. Might be very patient. Might be very strategic. We need to recognize it. The world says that this is very unloving. God says this is holiness. Notice the second phrase. We're back in Ephesians 5, verse 11 and 12. He says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Now let's just think about this for a moment. Rather reprove them. It teaches us that rejecting evil is not enough. That teaches us that exposing evil is required. That teaches us that not only do we need to expose evil, but we are to oppose evil. Reprove them. This is not saying write a letter to the editor. That's great. Do it. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about looking in someone else's eyes and saying to them, what you just did is wrong. The way you're living is sinful. That's wrong. You can't do that. You shouldn't do that. Well, you're picking on me. Well, you're against me. Well, you're critical. Well, you're mean. Well, you're not loving. Well, you're not cruel. Listen, mom and dad,
Don't believe your children, please. You tried that on your parents. Did it work? Maybe it did. If it did, it might be harder for you to overcome. Do you want your kids to turn out like you did? You could have laughed. I mean, you know. But listen, if you did that with your parents and it flew, you hopefully are humble and perceptive enough now to say, God bless my mom and dad, but you know, they shouldn't have let that stand. And you can change that in your generation. Or just let it keep on going generation after generation, opposing evil. Let me just read these verses to you for time's sake. Matthew 18 is, I trust, familiar to you. Verses 15 through 17 says, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, watch this, go and tell him his fault. And I'll read the rest of the passage, but I want to stop there because that's what I'm trying to emphasize tonight. God says, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault. You say, that's not comfortable. There's no requirement that you be comfortable. Well, I don't like this. That's not a problem. You don't have to like it. Well, I don't think that would be very enjoyable. It's okay. You don't have to enjoy it. Well, I'm not sure what to say. Oh, sure you do. You know what to say. You know what to say. Tell him his fault. Tell him his fault. That's what God says. Tell him his fault. You are at fault here. This is your fault. There's a problem and there's fault to be found. Tell him his fault. That's what God says. He goes on. He says, tell him his fault between thee and him alone. See, that's where we mess up sometimes. Sometimes when someone sins against us, instead of going to that one who sinned and speaking directly, pleasantly, kindly, cautiously, under control, prayerfully, gently, tenderly, graciously, mercifully, charitably, lovingly, but nonetheless, tell him his fault. This is life-touching life. And do it alone, between you and him alone. You know what I found? There are some people that are better at doing this than others. But I have found that people who will practice this, they see resolution all the time. Most cases that I've known of, most cases, if you go and you tell them their fault between you and him alone, nobody else, don't spread it, one-on-one, life-touching life, there could be a misunderstanding, there could be an agreement to disagree, there could well be tears, there could well be prayer. But because it takes humility to go and tell them and just talk and say, hey, someone want to talk to you about it. Now you can do this the wrong way. Now you're a jerk. That's not going to make it happen. It's going to have to be with love and kindness. He goes on and says, tell him his fault between thee and him alone. I think you know the passage. Let me read it to you. He says the word if over and over and over again in this text. He says, if he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he'll not hear thee, give up. That's what he says. This guy's worth it. Yes, he's at fault. He won't hear you. You have gone over and over and over again. It doesn't say go one time, don't go again. Along. No, the idea is to restore. The idea, how much is that relationship worth? How much effort do we spend trying to restore people from fault? If he will hear thee, you have gained something that was lost, not spiritually lost, not in the sense of eternally lost, but something that was lost has been gained. If he'll hear thee, you've gained your brother. But if he will not hear thee, don't quit.
Get some corroborating witness. Take two or three witnesses with you. Take two or three with you. And in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. If he shall neglect to hear, he says, take one or two more. That is not two or three. If he shall neglect to hear them, tell it to the church. If he shall neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Not an enemy. But like he's unsaved. He's not responsive to the truth. Don't write him off. Evangelize him. Let him be as a heathen man and a publican. Help him to understand you cannot maintain innocence in light of this fault and the evidence of this fault and the brotherhood that comes to you. You can't maintain innocence and fellowship. Listen to Galatians chapter 6. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, if somebody at fault, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you are just spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. I think we need to ask ourselves in light of Ephesians 5. When we know someone who is wounded by sin, when we know someone who is wounded by sin, who is at fault, do we go to them or do we avoid them? Isn't this the message of the Good Samaritan? One went to him. The others avoided him. How is it that some of us have a great heart of charity that if we saw someone with a broken down car and they needed a jump on their battery, they had a flat tire, a lot of you guys, man, you'd be right out there in the parking lot. We go out there tonight, somebody's got a flat tire, is any number of you, bang, right there, help fix the tire. That's good. That's the way we need to think about people that are wounded in sin. To go to them. To talk to them. If somebody's out there, they got a flat tire, you go to them and say, hey, how you doing? I got a flat tire. Yeah, well, you know, you got three other tires. They look all right. I like the color. Awesome. Pretty cool, man. Hey, is the horn work? Huh? How are the windshield wipers? What do you think? Hey, could I sit in it? He said, it's absurd. May the Lord help us to recognize that it's absurd to talk to somebody who has a fault in their life and to think that it's loving to say nothing. When we get involved in other people's lives and problems, it is not minding our own business. But it is minding God's business. God calls us to that. And then there's one last phrase. Let me take a few minutes and look at this with you. Verse 11 of Ephesians 5 says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Then it says, here's some rationale. It says, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. Does this remind you, if you were here with us a few weeks ago, where verse 3 of this chapter says, but fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as become of saints. And is it not interesting that verse 11 talks about these works of darkness and reproving them, and verse 12 says, it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. That is, just talking about some sins is shameful. It is a shame. It is shameful. We ought to be ashamed of ourselves as Christians even to speak of those things which they won't even do in public. They do it in secret because they're ashamed to do it in public. It should be, we should have enough spiritual discernment to understand that is shameful behavior. It is a shame for me to talk about it as though it's no big deal. Just talking about some sins is corrupting to us. Just conversing about
some sins is that which can leash over unto us. If this does not have an application with YouTube and internet and all the technology that just is being shoved down our throats today. Wow. Consider. To the world, to advertisers, to athletes, to entertainers. What is off limits? Where do they draw the line and say, no, no, you can't go past that line? There is no line. There's no line. The kinkier, the better. The goal is to attract attention. The goal is to appeal to lust. To appeal to that which is so defaced. It is universal in the human being. It off. That's still working. Anyway, we're almost done. Advertisers, entertainers, we recognize this. No line is too dangerous to cross. I mean, the further you get across the line, the better. They don't care. Listen. They don't care if the attention is negative. They want attention. Talk about me. It doesn't matter what you say, talk about me. Now sometimes Christians are too naive, I'm afraid, too innocent, too gullible to understand. The free advertising sometimes we give to places because we say, did you hear what they did? Come on. What? Why do we feel like we have to make sure everybody knows what they did? God help us to feel compelled to say, did you hear what Jesus did? And all that we said. We've got some better stuff to talk about. Let's walk in the light. Let's not focus on hating the darkness even. We can hate darkness to hate darkness. But let's not hate sin so much that all we can do is hate sin. We don't hate sin as a man, as an end in itself. We hate sin in order to love Jesus and recognize sin is the problem. What would you think of a farmer that said, I got the greatest farm. You come and look at my fields, there is not one weed. There aren't any crops either. There's no corn, there's no tomatoes, there's no beans. I didn't plant anything good, but thanks. No weeds here, baby. I got the best crops. Sometimes as Christians, we can so focus on sin. Don't focus on sin, man. The power of sin is broken. Focus on Jesus and let the Spirit of God use you to assault hell, so to speak. And to talk about Christ and to give the gospel to people and be raised to that level of living for Christ. It's a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. I ask the question, what line is too far for the world to cross? What is off limits? You know, at some level, who cares? Here's the question. What line will you not cross? What topic is off limits for you? What behavior will you say, not on my watch? That is not going in these ears. I don't care who says it. Your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your children, your television, your internet, and you say that, or you walk away and they are offended at you and you are tempted to be an emotional hostage to them, and you crawl back because you do not want possibly to lose their fellowship. There's something more important here than you. There's eternity. And there's God. And we're not careful, and we are unwilling to do this. We are not walking as children of light. We're walking as children of shadows. And we say, oh, how I love Jesus. But we don't love Jesus enough to say, I am siding with Him, and I'm against your sin, and I love you, and I will do anything to help you, but I am not going to tolerate that filth. I'm not going to do that. You can't do that in this house. You can't say that in this presence. I will walk away from you. I will not put up with that. And then draw a line. Don't do it like I'm saying it. I'm not here. This is preaching. That's not relating. You understand that? What's off limits to you? What would it take for you and me to walk away from a conversation? I mean, we ought to know. I'll give you a good start. Fornication, all uncleanness, or covetousness, filthiness, foolish talking, jesting, whoremonger, unclean person, covetous man, idolatry. That's a really good start to say. God, help me to develop the wisdom, the discernment, to recognize it when I smell it, when I see it, when I hear it, and then have the saint to absent myself. Do you want it to say anything? Might get an opportunity. Hey, where are you going? I'm going to go use the restroom. It's better than staying there. You know, you might have an opportunity. You know, if it's 17 against one, you do what you like. Well, that's God, I'm not going to listen to it. Yeah, hey, do you want to say that? You go ahead. I probably wouldn't recommend it. But let's not put up with it. Let's not allow our silence to be misconstrued. Many of you could give all kinds of examples, I'm sure, of how you've done this. But we'll resolve the issue by just saying and conclude it by saying light simply does not cooperate with darkness. They don't get along. Light repels darkness. And we are to be children of light. Saved people should not cooperate with sinners in their sin. We should repel their sin. And saved people should not cooperate with professing Christians who indulge in sin either. It's going to take a lot of wisdom. There's a huge report that came out just recently. 280 some pages about a good mission board. We do not support anybody under that mission board. But this church has in the past. A massive scandal. Moral scandal. There's a doctor and all kinds of children. Filthy. That can happen right here in this building. That can happen here. Sin problems are not them. It's not out there. It's us, guys. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Amen? For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done to them in secret. We're vulnerable. So let's hide in Christ, our rock. Lead on, O King Eternal. Let's stand together. We'll pray.